Listen, there's a great work to be done. As soon as you win this court battle, you must deliver this message. Take advantage of this opportunity and declare a powerful message to this world. He expects more of us. He believes we can do more. Who's going to stop Christ? Who's going to stop Christ from getting this work done?
This is Behind the Work.
Welcome to Behind the Work. I'm Grant Turgeon. I'm joined by a very special guest today, Mr. Ryan Malone. Welcome.
Thank you.
Well, it's great to have you here. And the reason why I wanted to invite you on the show was because last month I sat down to read some articles on the PCG.church website, and I found yours called The Church's Finest Hour. This is actually the cover story of the January-February 2024 True Education, which readers can get for free at pcg.church as well. But this article I really thought was something pretty special and does cover maybe an aspect of church history that we haven't talked about very much. So this is basically taking us back 45 years to when the state of California attacked the Worldwide Church of God in 1979. It was a completely unconstitutional assault on God's church. Mm-hmm. And it's really just another case where the truth is stranger than fiction. It's just almost unbelievable that something like this could ever happen. So maybe we could just start by talking about what led you into studying this subject and how it came about that you put together this article.
Yeah, it's such dramatic church history, and Mr. Armstrong himself said it was going to go down for the next 1,000 years in history because of what had happened. And yeah, the part of the reason that we wanted to write something about it like this was, well, because of how important it is. And it's easy to sort of encapsulate this dramatic moment in church history with this one word, receivership, which kind of doesn't even really have any meaning to us unless we're in, it's kind of a jargon word, you know, unless you're in the legal world or that type of thing. So obviously it was something that that I just wanted to know better personally. And so I had prepared some material on it years ago for a message to give about it. And the approach I took was, okay, I want to read the history about it. Of course, I had read Stanley Rader's book, Against the Gates of Hell, which is essentially about this moment. And I thought, well, let's see what Mr. Armstrong wrote about it. And so I basically, you know, over the course of 1979 and 1980, he wrote over 30 letters. So I wanted to I read every letter and said, well, this is the apostle's view of what's happening in the church. And that gives a really unique perspective. And then, but what actually caused the write-up of this was, Mark Jenkins, who's the managing editor of True Education, he was also teaching the modern church history class last semester at Imperial Academy. And he said he would like something, some material that he could hand out that basically this is this grandiose moment in this, you know, this great conflict in modern church history. And yes, we had this amazing article by Mr. Fred Dadalo, who was there, who actually, and he shares his experiences, which, you know, that's from his perspective. And then he shares the amazing financial statistics that go beyond it and how the church grew after that. And that was from that perspective. But in terms of an actual, like, here's a historical record in kind of a condensed way. You know, some of the things Mr. Armstrong wrote in Mystery of the Ages and his Worldwide News article about the history of the church was very, very condensed. So finding somewhere between what's between three paragraphs and what's between a whole book, right, you know, that Stanley Rader wrote, that we could just basically document it specifically to the young people, specifically to a class of IA students who need to learn about this history. And like I say in the article, you know, that January 1979 churchwide fast was on my third birthday. So I don't remember it, you know, I don't remember that churchwide fast. So I thought, well, I was 3 years old when this happened. I heard my parents talk about it all the time. You know, we still have people in the church, even in the ministry, who were there. The famous sit-in that we'll talk about, we still have church members who were involved in that from that time. So that's really just, I just thought, well, let's, sometimes writing an article is to convey a message in one sense, but also in the sense of, well, we also need to record it for posterity, for people to be able to go back to it, or for a class to be able to study it. So that was the reason for the article coming to being.
Well, yes, thank you for that. And then really, I think this is encouraging for a lot of us who are interested in researching something and trying to put some sort of writing together about it. You just basically found so much research and you had to go through all of it. I mean, you had to go through it, mark it up and make it happen. And I think that effort is greatly appreciated. It's something that we really do need to understand better. Now, with the state of California attacking the WCG, I mean, it's just, there's nothing really like it that we could understand. If we're familiar with the Philadelphia Church of God today, there's obviously a lot of loyalty within the church today. Basically, this state attack against the WCG happened because there were so many traitors within the church that were bold enough to try to actually take over the church from within. That God's church always has defectors, it's spiritual war. There's going to be casualties in that. But these people actually tried to destroy the church from within, and they got the state of California involved.
Right. Well, and I think they were, at the actual time this happened, they were out by that point, but this was definitely being planned from the inside. And then that they were removed. I mean, Mr. Armstrong's son, Garner Ted Armstrong, I mean, he was in the fellowship at the time, and his dad was asking him, I think there's something going on. And he's like, oh, no, it's fine. But then, yeah, it was at that 1978 Feast of Tabernacles where these dissidents were having their own celebration, so to speak. And they were planning this, you know, and Garner Ted goes to the press, and that makes him a public dissident. Essentially, Mr. Armstrong has to disfellowship him. And then anyway, these dissidents, they go to some lawyers and basically complain and say, well, the church is, you know, siphoning off funds and that type of thing. And so, you just look at the calendar and you say, okay, January 2nd, because January 1st is a holiday, and that year, January 2nd is a Tuesday. So this is the first day of the week of the business year. They go to this judge. Well, they go to the deputy attorney general. Anyway, the article explains all the names, and I try to keep it pretty simple in terms of like who I actually name and who are just other people, you know, involved, so people don't have to keep track of, you know, a dozen to two dozen names.
Right. I do think it is pretty easy to follow. Good. From that standpoint, for sure.
Yeah. And so basically they go to this, the deputy attorney general goes to the LA Superior Court judge, and they have this ex parte meeting. And an ex parte meeting, as it explains in the article, like, you only do that, that's only required, or you can only do that legally if there's some sort of urgent, you know, like something wrong, you know, detrimental is about to happen, you have to go right now. But to do it without the other party, to do it without the defendant or whoever needs to answer to the judge as well, is illegal. And that's what they did. And based on that meeting, and then you've got them talking about the WCG, you know, the Worldwide Church of God, as a bowl of spiders, and Wiseman, you're going to be the receiver. So Wiseman was supposed to go in the next day. Mr. Armstrong calls him a cigarette smoking ex-judge. Yes. You know, in our offices, you know, so you can just put this scene in your mind. This guy comes in, he basically, you know, Mr. Armstrong is gone. He says Mr. Armstrong's fired to one, you know, the minister basically on site that day. And then, seizes records and all this type of thing. And the article also explains like why Mr. Armstrong wasn't there, which is also, you know, basically you can see God's fingerprints in getting him out of there. And then it, you know, at one point he's there because of a health issue. So, I mean, there's all these things sort of building to this moment, but it also keeps Mr. Armstrong separate from it. And that allows for a, you know, kind of some mastermind moves, from God's work.
Right. And there was even a point in all of that where they started amassing the local police force in a nearby parking lot.
Right.
And I mean, at that point, it could easily get violent. I mean, you don't know how it could turn when it gets to something so extreme. And yet they were doing this against a church that was beloved by the community, that had a cultural foundation, that welcomed the community in for world-renowned performing artists. Mm-hmm. I mean, the community loved the Worldwide Church of God and what was being produced there. And yet all of a sudden you have the police force showing up about to just storm the whatever they thought it was, a compound, apparently they thought it was. It's just a beautiful campus.
Yeah.
There's no threat at all.
Well, and to build up to what that point where they're amassing, you know, the I think the Pasadena paper says, you know, authorities mass for church raid or something like they know it's going to happen. But to build up to that point, you know, you have so the receiver goes in, you know, invades the church, takes over it. I mean, now you have the state of California running a church essentially, which is unconstitutional. And then they fire Mr. Armstrong. They put C. Wayne Cole in charge, who's in on it. C. Wayne Cole tries to get the lawyer representing the dissidents to also represent the church, which is just wild. Anyway, Mr. Armstrong catches wind of what's going on, and you know, he gets him out, and then they go to court that Friday, January 5th, and then the court orders that all seized records be returned, and it reduces the receiver's power, and so like this is a great victory. So a lot of what happens in the receivership that we know, that dramatic history, takes place in that January. But there's a lot of sort of in the courtroom or behind, you know, kind of legalese kind of stuff happening months now that take place. But essentially, that court order, so, you know, something else happens, you know, in court that reinstitutes some of Wiseman's authority. Mr. Armstrong calls it an abomination. He calls for a church-wide fast. And then a week before the church-wide fast, people start, brethren, you know, of the Worldwide Church of God start showing up. And this is what prompts, like what you're saying, they're starting to get ready for this raid. If you don't mind, I'd like to read just a little bit of Stanley Rader's.
Oh, please
like,
do.
Like the way this is one of the reasons I wanted this to be written, where people didn't have to read the whole book by Stanley Rader, who Mr. Armstrong really praised in terms of how he handled this moment in church history. And so I relied on his book. But the way he describes brethren showing up, he says, he just starts with, then it began. He says, nobody knew what triggered it. There was no summons from Herbert Armstrong, none from me, or from any of the church officials or ministers. It started with a trickle of church members on Sunday, January 21st, just after the rebuff in the federal court. Soon the trickle became a flood, a massive outpouring of loyal members who converged on church headquarters from all over California and neighboring states. And what we know is they were basically, they wanted to keep the receiver out Monday morning when he came back to work, so to, you know, quote unquote. And so he says, by Wednesday, January 24th, we were astounded to discover that more than 3,500 men, women, and children had come to Pasadena to defend their church. There were people in suits and ties and in blue jeans. There were parents with infants in their arms, young people and men and women deep in their 80s and even older. There were license plates from Arizona, New Mexico, Utah, Nevada, Idaho, Wyoming, and Texas. They were all our people, these faithful who came because they were determined to save their church. And then he says that he talks about the reaction of the staff when they saw these people coming, and they at first they were puzzled. He says, then realizing the significance of what they were witnessing, many felt the sting of tears behind their eyes. Some wept openly at this remarkable, spontaneous display of loyalty, courage, and trust. Soon the large open space on the main floor of the administration building was filled with the arrivals. So basically, and then he paints this picture still of how they're filling in these areas, and they're singing hymns, they're holding these worship services, and that's keeping the receiver from getting out during the workday. And then, you know, Mr. Armstrong, they ask him, he's like, I don't know what this is about. I didn't call for this. But then Mr. Armstrong, the article explains, he even gives an address over the phone, like to the people who are there, encouraging them. And basically this makes the receiver move across the street and kind of examine the records from a different place. And Mr. Armstrong makes it clear, look, I don't have a problem with you examining the records. Please examine the records. You know, when Stanley Rader hired the greatest firm, the accounting firm, to explore the records during this time, he says that was a mastermind move because it showed we had nothing to hide. So anyway, now people are getting ready for this well, we're going to have to get in. We have to amass the law enforcement to get into the church because all these people are there. And basically, it was kind of, you know, it was kind of a game of legal chicken. Are they really going to arrest 5,000 people? You know, that kind of thing. and then the little detail, kind of what you said about the community support for the people in Pasadena, who, you know, who were part, you know, affiliated with the church, like Stanley Rader brings out, so many of the law enforcement had to come from LA. He says, because the day that the raid was supposed to happen, Pasadena police were calling in sick, you know, so that just shows that they didn't want to be any part of it. And so anyway, that's, and then at the same time, there's stories of church members bringing food out to the officers who are staked outside the church, ready to bring in them soup. They're you know, they're about to come, you know, raid their church, and they're like, "Well, are you guys hungry? You want some food?" You know. So this just shows. I mean, you see the two sides of the struggle very clearly, and it's at that point that, you know, I think Wiseman picks up the phone and like, "Can we have a compromise?" You know, Mr. Rader on behalf of Mr. Armstrong says, "Mr. Armstrong says no compromise. No, you have violated the Constitution. You violated the law. You know, basically, you can do this somewhere else. You can look into us." But anyway, that's basically that moment that the brethren caused, that breaking point where the receiver and his side of it was just, well, we have to back down.
It's just so inspiring. I get chills every time I hear that quote from Stanley Rader.
Yeah.
But really, you have to think Mr. Armstrong's example inspired that. Like you said, he wrote over 30 letters during that short period of time to the church to really just try to strengthen people's faith and uplift their spirits during that huge trial. And just to say, we're not backing down no matter what. Right. Set your mind to this. We're not ever going to give in or compromise. And that's a great lesson for us too. Just never compromising, even deciding when it's in relatively easy times, that when it gets tough, you don't compromise no matter what's going on. And even this, it was against the gates of hell, and they never compromised. It's just an incredible example.
Yeah. For the church members to do that so spontaneously. And like it's pointed out, they knew, like, moms were ready to go to jail with their babies. You know, that's basically what it was about, because they knew, well, this can't happen to the Church of God. The court case ends, you know, almost 2 years later, or this receivership ends. Well, what's interesting is how long it takes and how it kind of it seems to peter out, and yet it kind of doesn't. You know, the receivership gets suspended in February, and so that's a huge, you know, great thing. And so you can see that there was a, you know, breaking point there with the enemy, if I can put it that way. But then they wanted the church to pay for the legal fees. So the church appeals for the legal fees. And then the judge, the famous judge who got all this going, or basically endorsed all this, he said, you know, the fact that they're appealing this makes me wonder why they're resisting. So we should reimpose the receivership. So he saw their appeal as means to reimpose the receivership. And the only way that they could fend off the receivership was you can put a $1 million bond. And so then this article shows how there was like this 48-hour pledge drive, but no one was getting any sleep, just calling around the world. And the church raised almost $3.5 million over 2 days to basically keep the receiver out. You know, so you have these little flare-ups that happen over the course of these, you know, this entire, 22-month ordeal. And, you know, in the meantime, you've got, you know, 60 Minutes airing this awful yellow journalism, basically trying to make the church look bad. Mr. Armstrong says, well, I'm going to quote you the parts of the interview transcript that they didn't show, so you can see like what the context is for this and that, because they were just trying to get the public riled up about, well, look at this church siphoning off funds.
So even 45 years ago, they were cutting up parts of the interview to take out the important context.
That's right. Yeah, it was just, and Mr. Armstrong said, and they were doing it for entertainment value. That's all they care about. They didn't care about getting to the truth, the plain truth. And then, you know, Mr. Armstrong, never mind that in December of 1979, he becomes the first Christian leader invited by the Chinese government to visit communist China. It's like this massive thing's happening in the work. And then he's writing about that as he's saying, oh yeah, and this is still going on with the church, with the receiver. This is on the back burner. So he's doing, he's putting out newspaper ads to address this so the public knows what's going on. There's this really amazing press conference that takes place in March of 1980, where all these religious officials get with the Worldwide Church of God, not because they agree with their doctrines, but they agree that the state shouldn't be able, you know, if they can come after WCG, they can come after us. And they say this was the largest aggregate constituency represented in a brief before the Supreme Court, because all these religions represented, you know, 83 million Americans or something. So as I bring out in the article, this is also a time when God's church, which is generally small and kind of off in the corner, is really well known. You've got this press conference, you've got 60 Minutes, you know, kind of on the negative side of it. Mr. Armstrong going very on the offensive to put all these newspaper ads out. And then it's in the meantime, what's really going to break the case is what they're having people do in Sacramento. And we have brethren who were actually in Sacramento outside the state capitol. Was they were trying to pass this bill that basically said the attorney general cannot supervise or control churches. So when that bill passed, late August of 1980, well, it wasn't until October 14th of 1980 that the state of California actually dropped the case, because they had to. They had no legal footing. There was a law actually now prohibiting them from doing what they were doing.
So we do often think of January 1979, but it did last almost 2 years before it finally was completely over. And that's really just a nightmare when the state or the government can attack a church or whoever it is. We're seeing something similar in politics today, yep, where Mr. Donald Trump, even if he's convicted of nothing, could still be on the hook for hundreds of millions of dollars. And we think, oh, well, that's crazy. Nothing like that's ever happened before. And yet here, 45 years ago, it happened to God's one true church on earth. And it's just incredible how history in some ways does tend to repeat itself. Even in the most free nation on earth, you can still have a breach of justice like this.
Right. And so often in those exact cases, like what you're talking about now and back then, what they accuse you of is what they're guilty of. You know, Mr. Armstrong says, you know, I'll show you how I'm using my funds when I go on these trips, and how what I'm actually not even using church funds for, which I would be justified to use church funds for. And then in the same time, Wiseman, he's like, he's siphoning off all this money for personal use. So like they're accusing us of what they're guilty of. And that you see that play out today. It played out 45 years ago.
Yes, history really does repeat itself. I suppose we could just finish with some lessons we can learn. I mean, we already talked about just the need to refuse compromise at all costs. But what else do you think we really need to digest and really take to heart from this incredible history?
Well, I think like the way what you said there about compromise, I mean, and what we were saying earlier, even about Mr. Armstrong saying it was just sort of a cleansing for the church to kind of show who was on whose side and that type of thing. So that's certainly Mr. Armstrong felt it sort of sifted out some lukewarm tendencies in the brethren. That's certainly something when you have to pick a side, or when it comes down to it and something's under the heat, that's when the metal is tested and that type of thing. So I feel like there's so many lessons in faith in this, in trusting in God, I feel another lesson based on how the brethren responded and how that just impacted the flow of these events so dramatically, that I feel like if you have trouble realizing your importance in God's work, this history is for you. You know, it's like God's people, it's all one spiritual organism. And I mean, well, in one sense, God could do anything without us, but he doesn't want us to see ourselves as expendable. And he wants to see that we do play a part, and we can do things that really just shake the foundations of, you know, what an enemy attack is trying to do. I think it can also boost our faith for, you know, any kind of persecution that's coming in the future. You know, and what happens if the authorities are telling the church officials that they're fired or they're going to jail and that type of thing. You know, it's easy to obey God in, in sunny weather, you know, the fair weather sailor sort of thing that my dad would always talk about because he was in the Coast Guard. But, but then when the ship start, you know, when the ship's under attack or it starts to sink, well, what kind of sailor are you? So that to me are some of the, those to me are some of the great lessons.
Yeah, it's really powerful history. I would really encourage everyone to go to pcg.church, find The Church's Finest Hour by Mr. Ryan Malone. We've been speaking with Mr. Ryan Malone today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Oh, it's been fantastic.
And thanks so much to you, the listener. Also, make sure you go to pcg.church and click on the resources tab where you can find back issues of True Education and other publications. We have a whole lot of them here in the Philadelphia Church of God, and it's all available to you absolutely free of charge. Thanks so much to everyone for listening today. I'm Grant Turgeon. This has been Behind the Work.
You've been listening to Behind the Work. Email your thoughts to comments at kpcg.fm. Listen for a new episode each Monday at 12 p.m. Central Time.